Welcome to the Wisdom Circle. To subscribe or follow us on your favorite podcast platforms, please visit us at www.thewisdomcircle.com.
So Danielle, when you know, talk a little bit, because we interfaced together and at Turnkey, and we used to kid a little bit about the baby boomer trying to give advice to a millennial and didn't always go over that well. How is the business from a people standpoint evolving? In other words, you basically have a baby boomer generation, I will say, aging out relative to the 9-to-5 job, you know, in corporations. One could argue, is that good or bad? But at some point, you do age out. You then have, you know, millennial, Gen Z, you know, coming in and further on. With just different attitudes, as I think Race may have said offline, you know, his 4-year-old son knew what grandson knew what Amazon was, right? So, what are you seeing in meetings where there's I'm trying to articulate this well without confusing the question, but how are you seeing evolving of change between generational attitudes versus the next generation coming through with different perspectives?
Yeah, I think it's actually like a really interesting space to work in today, right? Like in terms of there are some really big generational differences, right? And even we were talking like I'm a millennial, right? Millennials are actually, if you look at the age range, and I had to make sure that all my numbers were correct before I kind of jumped on. But it stretches from 1981 to 1996. So my husband was born in 1985. He like didn't get a cell phone till college, I believe. He got his cell phone younger, but most people didn't get it until college. He worked at Radio Shack. And so he was able to work for key. But like I remember the first time I used a computer. I remember, you know, when I first got a cell phone and it was a flip phone and, you know, you only had so many words that you can text. And then what that meant for like my relationships in college with people, because I only got 100 messages a month. I have a 2-year-old. She already knows how to use my phone. Like, I don't like, she can navigate to YouTube. She turns on her favorite show. Like, wow. I don't know what that says about me as a mom, but like, you know, like it's just a different world and everyone has different perspectives. I was also reading, and I do this sometimes too, like, you know, the manner of speaking is different, right? And some of the phrases generationally are very different, and the phrases that people bring into the work conversation, right? Like the more casual versus more professional, you know, sometimes you have people who are older that don't necessarily understand what a younger person in the office means, like, because they say things like I do, like TLDR, which means too long, don't read. Like there are things like that, right? That I think are a divide. And then I also think like culturally things are a divide, right? Like you have millennials who, if you look at kind of like data around them and you think about brands, right? Values are really important to them, right? So like, what are the values of big companies? How are they showing up? How are they making sure that people see that they have these values and they keep to these values, right? But then you also have like the work-life balance, right? And work-life balance is really important to people, in particular in the millennial generation. What does that mean for the workplace, right? And how do you kind of have that push and pull? But I think sometimes makes work relationships maybe harder than they should be because there are just such differences between the people who are in the office.
How are people today learning how to present, give speeches, put together the right presentation? Is that being passed on, or is that something the individual has to just figure out organically?
I think that's why I know one of the other questions that you had was around like, you know, what is like the hybrid work environment versus
right. Yeah. That's a different way of asking the question.
But I think that's why like in office and in person is really important. So I'm a road warrior, right? I travel a ton. As you mentioned at the start, I'm in Miami. I'm based in LA, but you know, how often I'm there is a whole other thing. But like, I think, you know, having somebody that you're watching present, right? Being in the office, I remember even like Tony with you, like when we were in the office together, like you would be like, oh, hey, Danielle, like come join me in this meeting. That probably wouldn't have happened if we were in the same office, right? And so there's some of those things that happen that I think is really important in an office environment. So learning how to present, learning how to like structure your thoughts, all of those things are really important. And I think you learn that from other people. My husband and I argue a lot about this actually, about like raising our daughter, right? And AI and what that means for her and learning. He's not a writer. I'm a writer. I love to write. And I think the big thing with writing is it helps you structure your thoughts, right? It helps you think through like, how do I make an argument? How do I support my argument? All of those different elements. And we diverge there, right? He's not a writer. He thinks that like, you know, Chloe, our daughter, is going to grow up with AI and not need to learn how to write as much. But our big thing is like, if she's not writing, then how does she learn how to structure her thoughts? And you need right. that for presentations, workplace, etc.
Yeah. I mean, Adam Silver, they asked him, you know, do you regret having spent 7 years being a lawyer, even though mm-hmm. for the last, whatever year, 25, 30 years, you've been an MBA executive and commissioner, you know, for the last 10 or so. And he said, but the legal experience helped me learn how to structure my brain and how to write and how to present an argument forward. So yeah. in many ways, the same thing. And that's what always concerns me a little bit is, you know, where's the learning process and to where people can, you know, learn from people that did it a different way because they had no choice. Anyway, Ray, let me throw it back to you here.
Well, that's great because now I don't have to interrupt. I appreciate it. I'm looking at a different way of learning, right?
Yeah.
We look back, you know, just because something is different, change is just change. So if I wanted to write a speech on, if I wanted to write a wedding toast, or I wanted to write a eulogy, or if I wanted to write we had a break-in at the scenario here at Mariner Sands, and I could just go to ChatGPT and say, I want to write an article that's soft and understanding, firm, but clear, that security needs to be increased. We have to take certain measures, that. Now, I had to organize my thoughts just to tell AI what to do. And then in 30 seconds, I get a response, and then I can look at it and say, okay, but a little too harsh. Let's soften it up. But your two-year-old knows how to use a cell phone.
Right.
So that's a skill that you didn't have when you were two. So it's different ways of learning. And it doesn't mean it's good or bad. It's just different. And so 20 years from now, who knows if you have to know how to structure a sentence? You just have to tell people what you want. So I'm just throwing out there this idea that change is just change. It doesn't mean it's good or bad. And maybe different skill sets will be more important down the road. And you want your kid to have those. Because if they're, so your husband loves me and you hate me right now, Danielle, but.
He's an engineer. So he does understand structure. He's like, yeah, yeah, not connected to this and we're going to have big issues.
Yeah, he worked at Radio Shack. So he's one of the original nerds, right? I mean, I love the guy, Radio Shack. And look at the, thank you, Jesus, that somebody knows what I mean. So I just throw out there this whole concept of, you know, you can't look back to necessarily predict the future, and who knows what's, and Tony and I always go back and forth about this, but that's the fun part of what we do. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You know, my four-year-old grandson, Caleb, when I couldn't find something that I told him I'd try, Caleb, I've looked everywhere. He's like, did you try Amazon, Poppy? He's four. So he now has grown up in a world that's his retail outlet.
Yeah.
Period. Stop. You know, is that good or bad? He doesn't shop. He doesn't look for a bargain. He goes on Amazon. He'll get the best price because Amazon's figured that out. He'll get it tomorrow. I went to Ace Hardware yesterday to look for something. Guy goes, yeah, we don't have it. And I showed him it was on Amazon. And he's like, yeah. He goes, I just go to Amazon. I'm good. And it's here. Came today.
I wonder what that, going back to your point earlier, I wonder what that means for like the next generation too, for brand wise. So my daughter knows when there's an Amazon box sitting on our floor, she walks in and she goes, "Surprise for baby." Like, cause she knows that there's probably a present in there for her. So like, what does that mean for like brands too, as these kids grow up? It's just very different.
Yes. Oh, so funny. That's kind of
it's sort of scary. Sort of the juxtaposition of the technology explosion, and I guess what I'm about to say is part of that, but then how brands have to be so careful. You know, not to bring up the poor Bud Light situation, but you know, here's, you got all this going on to try to market a brand, and one little hiccup can create a major catastrophe. So, you know, so nothing can be taken lightly. So there's still the principles of discipline. What are we trying to say here? Who are we talking to? And that's my strong belief, is the principles of marketing and branding and communication have not changed for 200 years. You know, I mean, if you go back to, so I used to do when I taught at the university level, philosophers like Plato and Aristotle and Confucius, if you listen to their sayings, you realize that their thoughts have just been restructured by generals, football coaches, corporate executives. It's all the same sort of thought theme about what is leadership and what is communication, what is trust and what is honesty. It's just how it's now presented or absorbed is different. But anyway, Danielle, do you have any questions for us? Like, why is Ray wearing a purple shirt?
I love it. You're very Miami.
Thank you.
You're very Florida.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Yes.
I guess like thinking, I mean, going to this whole, like, the world is changing and maybe I shouldn't be worried about AI writing papers for my daughter later, but you know, we'll see. But
you will.
I think that it's interesting, especially for both of you, like, you saw so much change throughout your career, right? And the conference that I was just at, like, YouTube celebrating its 20th birthday this year, which is wild, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Think about how much YouTube has honestly, like, changed the world. How did you think about in your careers, like, approaching and embracing new ways of speaking to consumers, right? And how did you figure out, like, going back to my structuring the argument conversation, like, how did you think about, like, getting support from others as you're like, okay, we need to embrace this, or hey, we need to play a little bit of a wait and see game? Like, tell me a little bit more about that.
Ray, you want to go first? And
sure. Yeah, I think it's and as I talked about, you know, writing a speech through AI, I mean, curiosity has always been the foundation of my ability to adapt. Like, I'm kind of open. I mean, I think it's just being, and it's funny because people keep sending me these memes about comfortable being uncomfortable, which everybody says these days. And I had to say to one guy who sent me this, I'm like, I have to tell you, I know it's true, but I have to tell you, the first time I ever said those words out loud, I thought I invented that. Because I was giving a speech to a class at University of Miami, and they all want to know, what am I going to be? And I want to be an engineer, and I want to be a doctor. And I'm like, you just need to be comfortable, because you don't know what you're going to be yet. And so I think for me, it was just important to be open and to understand that it's not always going to be the way it was. Tony and I agree on foundational aspects of things. And then I think we differ a little bit about what is okay going outside of the boundaries and adapting to. Okay, Tony's point about Bud Light. Spent how many years, Tony, and how much money creating the brand? One thing knocked it off its perch. That's not always been the case. When you had a stalwart brand, years of advertising, marketing support, sales, that one thing could knock it off. But now social media has changed that dynamic. So I do think you have to think a little bit differently. And you can't just rely on, you know, the way we've always done it. I'm not saying, Tony, for a second that that's what you do. But I think that that's one of those things. Everything is just so precarious these days. One bad thing. Bill Belichick is right now, right? Going through a period in his life that I don't think he saw coming.
Yeah, I think, you know, people don't realize, even though if you're on the client side, as I was, and you're the buyer, you're actually also trying to, you have to sell that asset, that purchase internally, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you become an extension, you become an extension as the buyer of the salesperson, because you have to convince or bring logic and rationale to why you should be the official beer of the NFL or sponsor the World Cup or the Olympics. And to me, and you know, it probably wasn't always 100% in practice, which is, no one wants to be told to do something. You actually, or that you're driving an agenda, you know, that's selfish to you. It always, I feel, needs to be, you know, here's why I think this makes sense, and let's talk about it and what its attributes are and how we think it can help the brands sell more, whatever that brand is. And I would think that would be the case on the agency side, which is, you know, yes, we're an agency, and yes, we make money you being a client, but if we don't help you do your job better,
yes,
or bring you assistance to sell your product, then we're not going to be your client for too long. And so to me, in general, it's about building trust and honesty and making the other side saying, there's not a personal agenda here. It's about doing good work, and good work will win the day in the long run. And I think that's the key. I think, you know, as people go forward, you know. So and sort of in everyday life, I'm on the board of our HOA down here, and Ray said, oh, don't do that. That's the craziest thing you can do.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. And we actually had this conversation because there was a board member who had a very specific agenda, but lost the four other board members because you knew it was a personal agenda. It wasn't serving the 39 homes of the community. It was serving one home. And all of a sudden, you lose everyone's attention. It's like, okay, next, because that's a personal agenda. And so I think that translates to business sort of as well. So anyway, so I think we're sort of at our, we can sort of be wrapping up here a little bit. We put the two segments together. What did we miss? Anything we missed you wanted to talk about? I think we covered most of the things, but anything that you know, we haven't hit that you may have wanted to hit?
I feel like we covered the highlights.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I always like to throw out the return to office concept, because that's just a fun, I love getting as many opinions as I can. I don't know where I stand. I mean, I did both, and I do think I like the in-office thing, but you wonder about the workplace effect. And have you guys, like, what's the market cast position? Actually,
So we're 3 days in office. I travel a lot, transparently, so I'm not in as many days because
you're working.
Exactly. I think return to office is interesting, right? So I went over to London recently to go spend some time with my counterpart in EMEA, right? And he and I sat together in an office for 4 days, and we were super intentional with our time, right? Like, you know, we were there to meet clients, spend time together, and like build a strategy for like not only like working together, how we're going to like continue to work together and like make it even better. And then also like how we're going to, you know, drive growth in the EMEA market. And it was incredible. Like, I feel like we got more accomplished in those 4 days than we've gotten accomplished in the past, like 2 years trying to work through this remotely. Right. And so that's what I think, like from an in-office perspective, is you have to be super intentional with like, why are you going in? Why are you there? Who are you meeting with? What meetings are you doing in person there? Or like what strategy sessions, right? it shouldn't be like you're going into the office to sit in a conference room and take calls all day and not actually spend time with other people, right? So that's where I think we need to figure out what the balance is like, what is the intentionality of being in that office? Especially, I would say, with I think what's different is so many offices today are open concept, right? And so you don't have rooms with doors or like, you know, you're kind of sitting out there. And so does it, what makes sense, right? From you actually needing to be there in person. But I do think it's important.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of intentional, not just showing up and doing the same thing you do at home, except you're not in your pajamas or your shirt. Great. Yeah. Not good. I think everybody that listens to our podcast has some interest in RTO. So I just think it was a good thing we heard a perspective, because I really think that's a smart, be intentional, but it doesn't have to be 5 days from 9 to 5 or 8 to 6 or whatever, but going there with a purpose and going there often.
Because I think people have really enjoyed getting the time back, right? Like getting the commute time back. Now, I will say, like when I worked for Tony, I used to call him on my commute and I would give him updates. So I used my commute, right? So it's really like, how do you make sure that either like the commute's working for you, right? Or like you are being super intentional about the time that you're spending, because time's precious. Like that's what we can't get back.
Yep.
Yeah, it seems to me, on reflection, there's a lot of value to it, as long as this is the case for most things, people aren't taking advantage of it, you know, because you do hear people say, well, I go take my Pilates class from 10 to 11, then I get back because I don't have meetings. And, you know, and that can be fine as long as it's not abused. But, you know, so you want people to be productive, and culture is important, I think, at any company. You know, why do I want to continue to work here? I think we're starting to see companies where jobs are not going to be that plentiful, or they're going to be in different kind of specialties. And so an appreciation of your job and your work and what's the opportunities or not outside of that are going to be real discussions as we go forward.
Yeah. I also think going back to the generation, like the generations comment that was made earlier, even thinking about, okay, so millennials, right? My husband always points out to me that when he was graduating from college, it was the middle of the 08 crisis. And so like there weren't jobs. Oh. Like it was really rough. I graduated in 2012. Like there were jobs everywhere, right? Like it just was an environment. And right. So as we kind of see some of those changes today, like what does that mean from like a workplace attitude, right? What does it mean for people who haven't seen something like the 08 crisis before in their working world? And how does that change behaviors?
Yeah.
Two questions to sort of wrap up. One Ray always asks, so I'll steal his thunder. You're still young, so it's a tough question for you, but you know, with what you've learned and what, 15 years in the business? Is that accurate, roughly?
This is a lot of math for this early in the morning.
I'm not trying to give away your age, but what would you advise a Danielle Byrd coming out of the McCormick School now versus what you've learned being in the real business?
So I will say, like, relationships are the most important, especially in today's world, right? You know, they're like, it's so important to have relationships with people and to keep those relationships. No matter what happens in your world, I will fully admit, like I said, I had a 2-year-old, like I have not done as well as like keeping up with relationships since having a 2-year-old, right? And I think that's detrimental for me and my career and what I'm looking to do. And so, you know, now I'm sitting here realizing that and thinking like, okay, how do I work on building that again? So I think it's relationships. And then it's also like, no matter what type of job you have, like you will always have clients, right? Whether those, Tony, as you talked, like internal clients who you're looking to socialize things to, external clients. And so I truly believe that like making sure you understand your clients to the best of your ability and working every single day to understand them just a little bit better is paramount to doing well at what you do.
Yeah, I would, a quick example, like I used to have baseball teams say, why don't you I'll just pick on the Cincinnati Reds. Why don't you come see a game? You know, you've been a sponsor for 3 years. I said, well, have you invited me? You know, it's like, you know, don't just raise your hand when the 3 year deal is up in 3 months and now say, hey, come to a game. You always need to be servicing the relationship. Hey, is everything okay? If your wholesaler's hearing everything positive, is it helping sell beer, whatever? And I think people, it's like the job isn't done. And I think Ray would agree with this from being on the sales side for so long, is you're always maintaining the purchase and the relationship and making sure the client's getting out of it what they want. Is that fair or not, Ray?
Goes back to Glengarry Glen Ross, the greatest cameo in the history of film by Alec Baldwin. ABC, always be closing.
a quick aside to wrap up. So there's the fourth revival of Glengarry Glen Ross, you know, with going on in Broadway right now. People are going out like, where's the Alec Baldwin part? That was not in the play. That was written for the movie. So people who are so driven by movies and television are like, where's that character? Well, David Mamet didn't write that character for the play, and that's the play. So
greatest cameo in the history of film. Just the best. That would make people come into a conference room when they joined Raycom in sales, and they'd had to watch Glengarry Glen Ross with me. And we'd have pizza, and we'd watch the movie, and I'd say, do you think sales is hard? Try selling Swampland in Florida. Watch this. And we would... Well, I must have seen that movie 800 times. Never gets tired. I've seen all the plays. I haven't seen the new version with Kieran Culkin. But have you seen it? Is it worth seeing?
No. I haven't seen it. The last one that they did that had Pacino, was it worth seeing?
I saw that one, and it wasn't. It's tough. Yeah. It's like you just can't. Like you said, it's hard to always go back. And the second, my son just said something about second time's never as good as the first. There's a couple, you know, Empire Strikes Back. And Godfather 2 might be two sequels that actually were better than the original, but there's not one.
I'm going to tell one story to close, because I think this is my third. We're going to close now.
Yes,
and it's about Ray, but I think it's about people and culture. I think it's a good way to summarize it. Is when Ray went to Telemundo to run the sports division, he was obviously not Latino. And most of the staff was Latino. Okay, who's this guy from Comcast Corporate? You know, who's an Anglo business guy, you know. So Ray would call a meeting at 2 o'clock, and their normal culture was 2:10, 2:15, people would start showing up. And Ray would like, now I wasn't there, so I'm paraphrasing how he told me the story. It's like, okay, when I say the meeting's at 2, and this may sound harsh, the meeting's at 2. So he started closing the door at 2 or locking the conference door, maybe at 2:02 or 2:05. And then people would be like, you know, like Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate, which we just watched the other day, 1967 film, banging on the window of the church. And so they learned that the culture was when we meet at 2, we meet at 2. And long story short, they ended up loving Ray as a boss and as a leader, because they understood the standard, and they were successful doing it. And I think at the end of the day, most people, you want to be consistent, you know, you want to show leadership and build a culture that everyone says, okay, at least we know the rules, we know where we're heading, we know what we're trying to do, we're going to have fun doing it, but it's just not something that just splat all over the place. And I think that's a good example that Ray did back in the day. Danielle, thank you.
Thank you.
Before we wander off and talk about, you know, AI. Thank you for, I know you're busy, so I appreciate your help. And thanks for
really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been
fun. Thanks a lot. Thanks.